There are still about 5 members of the committee that are on the platform.
We just need one.
We just need one more chair, yes.
Okay, let me check Honorable Jobo so that she can join.
Oh, there's Honorable Thring coming in now, so I guess we can carry on, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Martinez, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the team, the support team from the Parliament for this Portfolio Committee, Minister Dillens and your team from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, Dr. Alec Muomi, our acting DG, Minister of Finance, Mr. Enoch Godongwana, I don't know whether he has joined in or not, and the team from National Treasury, the team from DBSA, the team from ISA, as led by Professor Ramakgopa. Good morning. And to you all members that are in the meeting. This meeting is very crucial to us as Portfolio Committee members, because ever since ISA became a part and directorate of Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, we have held many meetings with them trying to understand the role that the department has to play and also the role as the oversight committee that has to play on ISA. And through the interactions that we have had and the reports that we have got, we have been informed by ISA the relation with Treasury, the relation and interaction with ISA, and the fact that with DBSA, and the fact that when you talk of the infrastructure projects that ISA is going to do, you talk of infrastructure projects that relate to Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, that relates to road and transport, that relates to human settlement, that relates to water and sanitation. And it means that there are many committees that will have to be playing oversight role. And also the fact that there will be financing sometimes from private partners. And as such, as the Portfolio Committee, we are concerned, how then are we going to play our oversight role? We don't have to play oversight role over National Treasury. There is a Portfolio Committee for that. DBSA does an account to this Portfolio Committee. So we wanted to have this meeting so that we understand these relations and how then do we, as the Portfolio Committee of Public Works and Infrastructure, then have to play our oversight role. We understand there has been many commitments that have been made. For example, the 100 billion infrastructure fund that has to go over 10 years. We then have to, as much as some of us won't be here, if you talk of 10 years to come. But now we are here. So we really have to understand how then these three components, your National Treasury, your DBSA and ISA, will work together in planning and implementing this project, in how they will be spending this 100 billion, which we accept and applaud that it has been put aside for the infrastructure development in our country, which we know that in some of the area we're still lacking seriously when it comes to infrastructure development. So this meeting, we have convened it so that it can shed light to us. It can then question that previously could not be answered by ISA, then should be answered because National Treasury is here today, DBSA is here today. With those of you as honorable members, minister, both ministers, acting DG, Professor Ramakgopa, the head of National Treasury, if he or she is here, you are all welcome in this important meeting. And I believe that many South Africans would really also like to understand how this is going to work forward for the good and the development of our country. Ms. Martinez said, do we have any apologies other than the one of the DM?
Yes, Chair. We've got an apology from the Honourable Hicklin, who's feeling unwell. Honourable Sibisa had also printed an apology, but I see that she's on the platform. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Martinez. Can we then hand over to Minister Dillon? Maybe she's the one who's going to introduce the report, or then hand over to Minister of Finance if he or she, or Minister of Finance, he is in another meeting, but he said that he'll join us. I understand also she is in another meeting, but she said that she will be here when we are there. Minister Dillon, over to you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and also to Minister of Finance in absentia, to all the officials. Chairperson, once again, thank you for the opportunity. I am joined this morning by Dr. Alec Moemi, the Acting DG, and then Ms. Mamesi Masemula from ISTA, and some other officials just to be on standby also. I will just give a bit of background, Honourable Chair and Members, about where it all started. The Infrastructure Fund was announced by President Cyril Ramaphosa in 2018, and the government then committed 100 billion rand over a 10-year period. When I joined the department in 2019, we were one of the issues in my performance agreement was to make sure that we operationalize the infrastructure fund. And then what then followed there after lots of discussions, and then on the 23rd of June 2020, we signed a memorandum of understanding with the chairperson of the Development Bank, which was the then Minister of Finance. And then we now started thereafter, after we signed the memorandum of understanding in 2020. We then started to work, chairperson, on a memorandum of agreement as to how this relationship will be regulated. And we signed the memorandum of agreement on the 17th of August 2020, and it was signed by ISA, GPWI, Dr. Ramakgopa, and National Treasury, the Minister of Finance, and then the Development Bank of Southern Africa. That then gave us the framework under which to operationalize the fund in 2020. There was also an agreement that the funding for establishing and bringing in the necessary professional skills into the fund, that DBSA was going to give half of the money to employ the of professionals, which we finally did, and the fund was made fully operational in 2020. Now, also the establishment of Infrastructure South Africa. Infrastructure South Africa, the establishment thereof, was done in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014. IDSA was also approved by Cabinet in May of 2020. With the establishment of IDSA, we had to go through a process of the Department of Public Service and Administration. Minister Nkunu at the time approved the structure, and towards the end of 2020 we were able to populate and to start employing staff within ISA. Professor Ramakopa was then appointed by Cabinet to be the head of Infrastructure South Africa. So I just want to give that background. And that ISA, when we started off, Honorable Chairperson, was that we were also given a mandate as Public Works and ISA to prepare an infrastructure investment plan. Now, before that, in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act, We then selected 62 strategic infrastructure projects. And I have briefed the committee before that we went around the country, collected over 276 projects from all three spheres of government, from all national departments, from all state-owned entities, from the private sector, and put it through a methodology to make sure that they are bankable, and we finally arrived at 62. The 62 projects were approved by the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council and got gazetted as such. So ISA was playing a role of coordinating the implementation of the strategic infrastructure projects. ISA in itself is not an implementing agency, but they are doing coordination. And that was done together with the infrastructure fund that we are focusing on today. So I just wanted to give that historical background, Honorable Chairperson and members, and then I will ask Dr. Alec Moemi, the Acting Director General of DPWI, to introduce the rest of the team, and through you, Chairperson, then present to the presentation to the Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Minister Dillon. I understand that Minister Godongwana has joined us. In fact, I was informed that he has joined us. He is welcome, most welcome in the meeting. Thank you.
May I proceed, Chair, with your permission?
Yes, Dr. Moemi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and a hearty good morning to yourself and the members of the Portfolio Committee. I also wish to acknowledge the presence of the Minister Dilil and the Minister of Finance, and I wish to introduce the colleagues from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure that are with us today. We have the Acting DDG for the PMO, the Project Management Office in the department, being Mr. Nkosana Kubeka, who is also in the meeting this morning. As Minister has also indicated, we have the DDG at ISA, DDG Mametse Masemola, who's also in the platform. We have Mr. Heinz Vorst, Mr. Heinz Vorst is in the office of the Director General at the Department of Public Works. And we also have this morning with us other officials of ISA as well as the other officials of the department who play the support role in this regard. I am going to request, as per the minister's indication, that we hand over to Ms. Masemola to proceed with the presentation in this regard. Thank you very much.
Good morning to all members of the committee. I will be taking the Infrastructure South Africa component of the presentation. My name is Mahlatsi Mulugome. I am the program lead for infrastructure finance at Infrastructure South Africa. I've been with the team for about 2 to 3 years now, previously with a training in actuarial science. And this particular component of working with the infrastructure fund and the facilitating the oversight components is particularly where I play quite an instrumental role. So I will request to please go to the next slide. So just in terms of the process flow, or at least the outline of the presentation, I will go through the timelines of the operationalization. Minister De Lille spoke through quite a bit of insignificant components of the detail. I will also highlight the memorandum of agreement. It really spots drill in terms of the relationships of the different stakeholders that are involved with the infrastructure fund, as well as highlighting elements of the oversight. I will also go through the governance framework for the appraisal and evaluation of infrastructure projects and programs, the working relationship between Infrastructure South Africa as well as Infrastructure the Fund, and then the last component of the presentation will be for the Infrastructure Fund and their particular progress report, but other colleagues will proceed in that particular section segment of the presentation. Next slide, please. Oh, okay, next slide. So just in terms of the key milestones that we've achieved over some time, Minister De Lille alluded to the announcement of the infrastructure fund in 2018 and highlighted that it is 100 billion that is capitalized over 10 years, particularly for blended finance structuring for a public infrastructure project and program, and that was initially the concept. However, just in terms of getting it operational, what first happened was that we had to create an enabling environment for the operationalization of the fund. So there was the establishment of the Investment and Infrastructure Office in the Presidency, headed by Professor Hosea Ntsura Mokopa in 2019. It has since then evolved to what you would now refer to as also Infrastructure South Africa. But in essence, the clear directive for this particular office was to ensure that we build a credible project pipeline. And the component of credible is just projects that come to a stage of investability, and then in essence to coordinate stakeholders and to alleviate the South African fiscal pressures just in terms of the infrastructure delivery ecosystem. So then this was the enabler to the operationalization of the fund as we complemented some of the government stakeholders that are intrinsically involved within the fund. So just in the middle of 2020, there was an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, on the infrastructure fund sign between the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure as well as the chairperson of the Development Bank of South Africa board. And in essence, it was just really instilling the framework and understanding around the infrastructure fund itself and what role it's meant to play in the financing and delivery of infrastructure. Then we saw the evolution or at least the establishment and signing of the memorandum of agreement
which was signed in August in 2020. This was a tripartite a signature ceremony with Infrastructure South Africa, the Development Bank of South Africa, as well as the National Treasury being the signatories of that Memorandum of Agreement. And just in terms of the Memorandum of Agreement, in essence, it was developed to give effect to the decision of there being an infrastructure fund and to ensure that the roles and responsibilities are outlined clearly. And the rest of the presentation, we will go into the details of the three signatories as well as the infrastructure fund as well. So in 2020, towards the end in December, the executive was appointed for the infrastructure fund. We now refer to that individual as the chief investment officer. And he has subsequently built a team of about 17 professionals with private and public sector skills and experience, specifically geared for that financial structure required under the fund. And just in terms of the implementation and hitting the ground running with the fund and for it to deliver its mandate, so the projects that the infrastructure fund that it must consider, you know, it has to be appraised according to the methodology that is embodied within Infrastructure South Africa, and in essence that really looks to highlight, you know, the national priorities and etc. But we will also go into a little bit more detail around the framework that we use to review these projects. But in essence, the pipeline is approved through the Infrastructure South Africa. And those projects that are suitable for blended finance are channeled to the infrastructure fund. And this is through a committee called the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. There is a slide later on that goes into a bit more detail around this particular committee. And once the infrastructure fund has the pool of projects it can consider, blended finance solutions are structured per project, and they are reviewed and approved by the Infrastructure Investment Committee. This particular committee is chaired by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. We'll also highlight the details thereof a little bit later. Next. Okay. So the Infrastructure Fund itself, so in essence, the Memorandum of Agreement first starts with the purpose and duration. So just to indicate to the committee members is that we've tried to detail the slides as much as possible without replicating verbatim the content of the Memorandum of Agreement, but it's just so that the in-mouth detail is included in these particular slides. But in essence, the purpose of the agreement is to record the party's commitment to the establishment and management of the infrastructure fund, as indicated, effective 17 August 2020, over a period of 10 years, unless the fund is terminated, the memorandum of agreement is terminated earlier. However, there needs to be a 9-month notice period, or unless this memorandum of agreement is extended, and this would need an agreement by all stakeholders on all the signatories of the MOA. In the event of early termination, it just highlights that the Development Bank of South Africa will need to provide a report on the status of the ongoing projects and the detailed financial reports in relation to the infrastructure fund, as well as the costs associated with the termination or transfer of the infrastructure fund that would need to be recovered by the Development Bank of South Africa. This particular component will make more sense as we go into the later components as to how the DBSA participates financially in the operational costs of the fund. So the third section of the MOA, it just highlights that the terms and conditions can be reviewed on an annual basis, and any changes become effective once it is captured in writing and signed by all parties or signatories of the MOA. And we can go to the next slide. So just in terms of the roles and responsibilities, and I think that's what most of the MOA really embodies, we'll start with the infrastructure fund itself. And in essence, this is the the ring-fenced unit that really develops and structures the project components, and it's basically meant to undertake all activities necessary to develop vendor financing solutions, and also to identify appropriate funding structures. So just by nature of the actual infrastructure fund, you can use instruments such as grants, capital contribution, user pay, interest rate guarantees, or a combination of those, structure that in the financial model to ensure that there is some level of blending that you can attract that private sector investment to come through, also assist in the financial delivery of that particular mechanism that is proposed. The infrastructure fund is supposed to, where appropriate, also engage with financial markets to develop that particular financial instrument and prepare reports for approval of projects. This aligns with the DVSA governance processes and just in accordance with some of the eligibility criteria that is also highlighted in the infrastructure fund business plan. In essence, the role of the warm bodies that make up the infrastructure fund is to encourage the collaboration. Apologies for the background noise. Is to encourage the collaboration between public and private role players, and to ensure that you are able to unlock successful blended finance solutions. To actively support project owners as well in the development of the financial mechanism, just with that technical skills that the team has to support the sponsors where possible. And also to drive the processes in the planning stages until financial close, just to ensure that we get to that bankable stage of that of these particular projects. And these are, in essence, the key or the key and highlighted extracted components where the infrastructure fund participates, and then later on, as the project develops, they'll also be required to facilitate the monitoring of the implementation of the blended finance mechanism. And if there are any legislative and regulatory issues that need to be addressed by the relevant authorities, or where Infrastructure for Africa can facilitate some unblocking, the Infrastructure Fund team is meant to raise that. The next slide. Just in terms of the Department of Public Works, and in this particular MOA represented or comes in the form of Infrastructure South Africa. Infrastructure South Africa is meant to coordinate the development, assessment, management, and project preparation and monitoring of the comprehensive infrastructure pipeline related. Well, can we move the slide, please, to the next one? Okay, so I'm still on the first point. Yes. Okay, thank you. So I was just indicating, you know, the role that that Infrastructure Fund or ESA is meant to play around the pipeline, and maybe just to move on to the next point, which is point number two, is developing the eligibility criteria for these infrastructure projects in accordance to the Infrastructure Development Act. This was also done in consultation with the National Treasury, and also just around creating a criteria of what is deemed as financially bankable. Our additional role is to approve the business plan for the infrastructure fund. This is done on an annual basis as well. We submit projects to the infrastructure investment committees for consideration, categorization, and investment channeling. That will also become clearer when there's another diagram that I will speak to later on, and to facilitate statutory reform when necessary by creating an enabling environment to implement a project. And a key role that we also play is monitoring, evaluation, insight, and also extract lessons learned, what we call that intelligence, around the entire infrastructure project value chain. And also any other tasks that will give effect to this particular agreement in accordance to the terms and conditions of the MOA. Next slide. The Development Bank of South Africa is highlighted in section 6 of the MOA, and its mandate was to establish and manage the infrastructure fund in the point, well, highlights in the points that are detailed there on the screen. So the infrastructure fund is established as a ring-fenced division within the DVSA. So when it's ring-fenced, it's just that the operations and how the infrastructure fund proceeds with structuring and performing its mandate, it's separated from the activities of the Development Bank of South Africa in terms of its own core mandate and the activities that they perform. So the additional role that the DVSA has was to contribute to the preparation of the business plan, also support the annual infrastructure fund budgeting process, which is also based on the business plan, and in consideration through the government budget process. The DVSA has also committed to funding 50% of the cost of the operationalization of the infrastructure fund for the first 5 years of the agreement. They are also facilitating the recruitment and allocating resources necessary, including legal, human capital, financial sector specialists, just to ensure that the IF is able to fulfill its obligations under the agreement. Earlier I highlighted that the team now has 17 professionals that make up the technical team under the infrastructure fund. DVSA was also meant to appoint the head of the IF, which it has already done, to actively promote the infrastructure fund, manage the administration of the infrastructure fund, of the infrastructure fund funds for the purposes of the infrastructure fund, also establish and maintain the infrastructure fund account, and in the main, establishing appropriate internal controls, the accounting records, and also the reporting that is required quarterly and annually on the performance of the infrastructure fund. Also to ensure that, you know, the records that are collected to maintain the verification, auditing, and for the preparation of management accounts. It's to also ensure that the infrastructure fund is annually audited, to appoint independent auditors to fulfill this function in auditing the infrastructure fund, to optimize the infrastructure fund account and the balances that it might have in cash at any particular point in time, to appoint the chairperson of the infrastructure fund advisory committee, but we'll cover this particular committee at a later stage as well. So we just to sum it or to abbreviate or to create an acronym, we'll call it IFSEC, to nominate the representatives to serve on IFSEC, to serve as a secretariat to IFSEC. And I think we've covered the recruitment, and to also, DVSA also uses its procurement procedures and policies to procure project advisors once they've been duly appointed, to also manage reports on behalf of project owners, and to perform any other tasks that may be necessary to give effect to this particular agreement in accordance with the terms and conditions of the agreement. Next slide. So Section 7 covers National Treasury on the left, and then Section 8 will cover the common responsibilities that all the signatories have jointly. So just to start with the National Treasury roles and responsibilities, as highlighted by the MOA, it's to consider the budget submissions from DVSA. These submissions are approved by Infrastructure South Africa, and they must be in line with the defined budget process. National Treasury also facilitates funding recommendations through Mincom Bund and Parliament. These funding recommendations make reference to the blending components. National Treasury also will be funding 50% of the cost of the infrastructure fund for the first 5 years as of the effective date. So if you recall, the MOA was signed in August 2020. And to annually transfer National Treasury contribution to the infrastructure fund account. by putting national treasuries also there to put in place the budgeting process for the infrastructure fund blended finance projects. They also have an ability to nominate a representative for IFSAT. Again, I'll highlight what this committee does slightly later on, and to facilitate statutory reform when necessary, in essence to create an enabling environment to implement the projects and to promote the increased participation of the private sector in the blending structure and any other parts that bring effect to the MOA. And then Section 8 covers the common responsibilities, and all parties are then duly expected to coordinate with each other for effective implementation of the particular agreement, and just to ensure that, you know, there's an enabling environment for the performance of the fund to really be effective, and to also give effect to the terms of and conditions of this particular agreement. The signatories have also undertaken to convene biannually, just in terms of if there's any alignment that is required, and just in terms of alignment of reports, you know, all adjustments and alignment must be reported to the minister by the acting head of Infrastructure South Africa on a biannual basis. And just in terms of carrying out the mandate or any instruction under this agreement, all signatories and parties will comply with the statutory prescripts, including the PFMA, the legislative framework and government policies relating to procurement, supply chain management and other relevant legislation, strategic objectives and policy documents. Next slide. So this was quite a mouthful, but in essence, we were just highlighting, or at least trying to extract the key components of the MOA. So this particular slide just looks at the governance framework for infrastructure project evaluation and appraisal. So in essence, after I've spoken to the slide, and I am, if my team, Infrastructure Africa, has also presented in the past, you might have seen the slide before, but from this, you'll be able to see how exactly the infrastructure fund gets its pipeline. So Infrastructure South Africa, as approved by Cabinet in May 2020, is in essence meant to be the single point of entry for major infrastructure projects. The project sponsors, or where the projects really emanate from, is from national departments, provincial departments, local departments, state-owned entities, as well as the private sector. So the frameworks in which we highlight these projects, just in terms of aligning the strategic alignment with national priorities, we make reference to documents such as our National Infrastructure Plan to 2050, the country investment strategy as well. And in essence, as these projects come through, they are assessed according to the Infrastructure South Africa methodology, which is a 5-case model, and in essence, it's meant to really appraise and make that technical assessment of those projects and assist in developing the project where necessary. So the projects come in through our portfolio management office. So that is, if you look at the middle of your screen, right at the bottom block, and this plays within the ecosystem of making sure that we are doing the quality assurance of these particular projects. The projects are then channeled through our technical working groups. So we have working groups in different sectors, water and sanitation, human settlement, energy, transport, social infrastructure, municipal infrastructure, and the like. And once those technical working groups have compiled a report and recommendation, really assessing and packaging the project moves through to the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. This particular committee is actually chaired by the head of Infrastructure South Africa, which is our technical focal point, and it's just to ensure that the projects that we take on really are aligned to the strategic objectives and national objectives as well. And once we have recommendations on the different prototype or type of projects in terms of how to proceed, whether it is some kind of reform that is required or the funding pathways, then that those particular projects will go through to independent reviews to make sure that we validate and verify all of the work that has been done, technical work that has been done at this particular point. So the projects, if you look towards the right, when I'm speaking about funding pathways, it's that when we look at our project ecosystem, we capture them into three buckets. So there are projects that really can, you know, if we structured well, can find funding from commercial and capital markets. These are projects that tend to be commercially viable. They generally have a component where they can generate some revenue, and these projects we would then recommend that they are funded in that way, also to relieve the pressure on the fiscus and not necessarily go to National Treasury immediately for those funding requests. The second grouping of projects are projects that are identified as blended financing, and these particular projects, if they need some kind of augmentation or credit enhancement to bring in co-investment with the private sector, so this is where the public and private sector invest together to deliver that particular project, and these projects are the ones that end up with the infrastructure fund for structuring. And then the last grouping of projects are those projects that can only really be purely funded by the fiscus and generally tend to be projects that would not be able to generate revenues or some or one or other characteristic or feature, and those we would then recommend to seek funding from the National Treasury. So those particular funding pathways, as well as the technical recommendations of the projects and how to proceed with the delivery of some of them, that will get validation and verification by independent reviews. And then the final step of approval is the Infrastructure Investment Committee. This is the committee that I indicated was chaired by the Minister of the Public Works and Infrastructure, and this particular committee is the one that does the final approval. We can go to the next slide. Okay, so just in terms of the working relationship between Infrastructure South Africa and the Infrastructure Fund, I've tried to walk you through looking at the bigger diagram and what happens to projects as they come through and they're submitted through ESA and how they find themselves as a project structured for blended finance by the Infrastructure Fund. So we've just created a pathway map for easier reference. So basically it's drilling in on that pathway a little bit further. So as I indicated, the project comes in through Infrastructure South Africa. I spoke to the different layers of technical assessment, and that's stage one. And the project pipeline identification and how we, the recommendations that emanate there would then be come through the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. I think we just try to make it clearer as to what the flow looks like. Then once a project has been identified as a blended finance potential, then those particular projects are channeled to the Infrastructure Fund. So the second stage is for the Infrastructure Fund to design the program or to just structure the project such that it can be palatable for blended finance structure. At this particular point, there is some technical input and advice and recommendations that the Infrastructure Fund draws on, and this will be from the Infrastructure Fund Strategic Advisory Committee, IFSAC. Throughout the MOA, you'll see reference to IFSAC that will have a slide that clearly has to highlight exactly what it does. And then from the structuring, the projects come to the Infrastructure Investment Committee. This is a committee chaired by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure for approval. And once it comes through this particular IIC committee, the projects then proceed for National Treasury budgeting process. This also now starts to link back to the roles and responsibilities highlighted in the MOA. The projects go through a national budgeting process. In essence, what the Infrastructure Fund colleagues will do is to make a case and indicate the rationale behind the blended finance structure, why an allocation is required, and how they foresee it's really bringing in additional co-investment from the private sector counterparts. And once it goes through the approval process, or the National Treasury budgeting process, and if the project gets approved for blended finance, the project sponsor and the infrastructure fund then look around just making sure they agree on how they will proceed with procurement processes as well as the financing. So in some instances, and the infrastructure fund will highlight this later on, in the financing component, they will need support just to make sure that they communicate what the blended finance structure is, as well as the role that the private sector must play or they anticipate for them to play in co-investing, and that's where that support is required there. Then just in terms of implementation and monitoring and evaluation, so the implementation will be, which is stage five, will really be taken on by the project owner itself, but where support is required, Infrastructure South Africa will provide that backing support in the background, and as well as the monitoring and evaluation. For the blended finance project, the Infrastructure Fund will make sure that they monitor how the funding flows, the implementation components, as well as the actual delivery of that infrastructure, but that will also align to the monitoring and evaluation required by Infrastructure South Africa as well, and that comes to the end of the value chain, Infrastructure Fund value chain, if we can phrase it in that way. Can we go to the next slide? And this particular slide, it just tries to give a little bit of writing or essence to what exactly the different governance structures, what they mean to do. So the first one in the yellow, IFSAC, this is the Infrastructure Fund Strategic Advisory Committee. This is also highlighted in the MOA, and in essence, it's meant to act as a technical advisory body. The MOA also indicated that all signatories can nominate a representative to play a role on this particular body. So Infrastructure South Africa, the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, National Treasury, the participants must be at least at a DDG level to participate and serve on the particular structure. And then there are other counterparties that also participate here, are private sector professionals that might have played a role in the infrastructure space from a technical or funding perspective at some point in time in their career. One of the ones that I know of was a project finance professional at Ramage and Bank in his past career. So those type of valuable technical insights really assist with structuring some of the infrastructure fund blended finance structures. So the Infrastructure Review Committee, in essence, and if you just think back to that governance framework that we showed, in essence it's meant to assess the alignment of the proposed projects to the National Infrastructure Plan, to confirm the alignment of all projects and programs to the national priorities, but also to the eligibility criteria as per the EFA methodology, which we also highlighted earlier, is to ensure that the funding from the infrastructure fund is utilized equitably across sectors and as determined by the national infrastructure plan. And that's where the recommendations what happens to the projects and then the finance comes from. And then the membership consists of Infrastructure South Africa, National Treasury, DPME, and that's basically what comprises that technical review committee, the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. And then the last one is the Infrastructure Investment Committee, IIC. This is chaired by the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. It includes the DGs of National Treasury, DTIC, DPME as well. And in essence, it's meant to approve and recommend the appropriate financing mechanisms for the projects. And I've just taken you through that flow diagram. And, you know, in essence, we need to make sure that the infrastructure project portfolio and everything that encompasses this portfolio, they really are in line with, you know, our key positionings as outlined in some of our documents like your NIP, PIS, etc. Highlight risk performance and make sure that all key financing instruments have been considered. And then also just in terms of any strategic issues within or across the infrastructure sectors or financing of those particular projects and portfolios, they are able to be brought forward and to the extent possible addressed or yeah, find expression in some shape or form going forward with our executive principals leading those initiatives as well. Chair, this is where I will be handing over for the infrastructure fund component. I think the how we thought we would do it is for the infrastructure fund to get an introduction and then the colleagues to then join on and cover the content that will be highlighted on your screen. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Masati. Acting DG, who then is going to present this slide. Not sure whether Acting DG is still part of the meeting. Yeah, he's still here.
I am here indeed, Chair. And the presentation has covered everything we want to put forward. Thank you, Chair.
No, acting chairperson.
I don't think acting DG is aware that this matter has indicated that there's someone who's going to come and present.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that person must just come in.
Chair, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair, this is Buitumelo Mashilo from the National Treasury team. We thought that the Minister of Finance would introduce the National Treasury team or the Finance team before we go into the project-specific issues. If he's not on the call, I can quickly do that. And the team can go on to present the project. Minister of Finance?
No. What is going on now?
We have been informed that Minister of Finance
yes.
is assisting. So if then he's not taking on, I think Minister, Mr. Mashilo must introduce the team that he is with. Yes.
Honourable Chairperson, I was hoping that we complete the presentation now, and if Mamesi Masemula can complete the presentation or Matlachi must continue with the presentation, it will be better. I also forgot, Chairperson, to make an apology for Professor Ramakopa. He is with the delegation, he joined the President on the UK delegation, so he's not
mention Minister. Yes, Minister. Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We had split the presentation into two parts. So the first part was going to be covered by Infrastructure South Africa, and Ms. Molokome has succeeded in doing so. So the next slides are going to be presented by the Infrastructure Fund Executive Team, and between Ellen and Mayor Flora, they will take us through these last few slides. So over to you, Ellen and Flora.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Minister De Lille, Minister Godongwane, who I think is not on the session, and good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Flora Marutle-Simelane, and I head legal within the Infrastructure Fund. I've been with the Infrastructure Fund for about 18 months now, having come from the private sector and specifically investment banking. I've come from one of the big five banks. If I can start with my presentation, Leanne, would you move to the next slide, please? Thank you. So the way I'm going to structure the coming slides is that the first one will talk to the advanced projects that is in our pipeline, as Mahlatsi has indicated. These projects have been channeled to the Infrastructure Fund to assist with blended financing. And then the next two slides will focus on the projects which we've taken to National Treasury through the BFI, the Budget Facility for Infrastructure, for funding to tap into the government contribution that's required from the projects. I think, as we all know, we're still awaiting for approval and confirmation from National Treasury as to whether the funding then has been successful. But I'll get to that in the next two slides. Maybe just to, on the slide, there is quite a bit of detail. However, just to highlight these three projects, we took through the BFI process last year in 2021. And we're successful to obtain the funding, the BFI funding. Perhaps if I can illustrate that the Budget Facility for Infrastructure is a reform to the national budget process to allow for state-owned entities or national outlines who are, as Mahlatsi pointed out, national government, provincial government, or local government, and any state-owned entities who we assist to with their projects. And the BFI process really has two windows every year through which we can take through these large infrastructure projects and tap into the 100 billion that Mahlatsi spoke to. So that is how we access the 100 billion that has been committed accelerating infrastructure investment and delivery in South Africa, which has been provisionally allocated to the Infrastructure Fund. In terms of the three projects that were successful over the 2021 BFI process, the first one is a program, social housing program, and there we have partnered with the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, SHRA, as well as the Department of Human Settlements. We've signed a mandate letter with SHRA. And the ask here, Honourable Members, is really the need is for the construction of 320,000 social housing units. And this is the program in totality. However, at the moment, over this 2021 BFI process, we are focusing on four projects that SHRA has requested we assist with. We've signed mandate letters and are in the process of negotiating facility agreements with two social housing institutions for two of the projects that form part of the program. We have done a due diligence process as well from a legal, technical, financial perspective, and we're expecting expecting to sign the relevant facility agreements for the two projects in December, and then hopefully financial close early next year. For the social housing program, you will see there that we were successful in attaining 305 million rand, which we will utilize over a period of 2 years. The second project is the upgrade and refurbishment of the Olifantsport and Ebenezer water supply scheme. There, just a bit of detail, the project is really upgrade works, and it's classified as phase one. We are assisting Lebele Northern Water on this project, and to increase the availability of potable water by 55 milliliters a day, with 40 milliliters a day from Olifantsport and 15 from the Ebenezer component. We were successful as part of the BFI process and have received 1.4 billion for this project. The status of the project is that we've established a project steering committee between ourselves, Lebele Northern Water, as well as DWS, Department of Water and Sanitation, who chairs the PSC. And this will be in terms of assessing what is required from the project and also addressing outstanding implementation readiness studies and the like to deal with matters of the project. We've signed an MOA with Lebele Northern Water. And here we will be tapping into 1.2 billion as a fiscal grant for the social component from the DWS. And the intention then is to access 2 billion rand of the 4.6 billion from the private sector, which we will be crowding in. And then the last project, which is in the development or advanced stages rather, is the redevelopment of port of entry program. This talks to the six ports of entry around South Africa. We are assisting the Department of Home Affairs with the submission to the BFI for land acquisition as well as bulk infrastructure. The project or program rather is captured as a public-private partnership, and therefore there is financing from a debt and equity perspective that would be at play. The status of this program is that the RFP has been issued to Treasury for Treasury approval 2A, and we are waiting Treasury's approval in this regard. So you will see there then, out of the total, the project costs of the three programs, which amount to 14.8 billion, we were successful in achieving or tapping into the government contribution by way of a grant and the BFI in an amount of 1.7 billion. Next slide, please. Now, these three coming slides, actually two, outline eight programs and projects that we took to BFI this year. As indicated, we're still awaiting for confirmation as to whether or not the amounts requested have been successful. The first project is a TCTA project, Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority, who is one of the implementing agents of the Department of Water and Sanitation. This covers phase one, which is an interbasin water transfer scheme, and it basically will increase the yield of the system from 394 million megaliters to 614 per annum. And it consists of an 81 meter long dam on the Umkhwamazi River and 32 kilometers long conveyance infrastructure, as well as 5 kilometer raw water pipeline. We've partnered, as indicated, with TCTA, as well as the Department of Water and Sanitation. Here, the project cost is, to the right, you will see there's more detail on the coming slides as to the total project value of the cost. What we have requested in the second column is the total BFI And then it shows whether we've asked for the government contribution as a grant or whether we would be on lending the amounts to the project sponsors as concessional loans or and the like. And then the other columns there you'll see the space of the various financial periods of the MTF period and how those are broken down, which I won't go into detail. And in terms of the next project, and the next two actually, the next three rather, are in the water and sanitation space as well. The Lanceria wastewater treatment works, it entails the planning, design and implementing of the Lanceria water wastewater treatment works and associated bulk outfall sewer. The objective here is to construct and commission a module of 50 milliliters a day of the new Lanceria wastewater treatment works. And here we've asked for 1 billion of the 3.4 billion project cost. The next one, the next two are projects which we've, apologies for the second one, we've partnered with the City of Johannesburg. The next two projects are in partnership with Mahalis Water as well as the DWS. The first one, the Moreteli North Clip 4 bulk water supply project, is aims to supply reliable and sustainable bulk potable water to Moreteli North as well as Bela Bela and surrounding municipalities in Limpopo. And they, out of the 5.2 project cost billion, we've asked for 1.9 from the BFI process. The fourth project there is in respect of the Pilansberg South Bulk Water Supply Project, Phase 2. And the scheme aims to supply reliable and sustainable bulk potable water to a number of municipalities in the Rustenburg area. And then the water demand in areas served are increasing due to economic mining-related growth, and the existing infrastructure requires augmentation. And then supply to supplementary areas to meet the growing demands. The project costs there are 2.9 billion and we've asked for 1.8 billion in viability gap funding for the social component. And we will ask for 1.1 billion from the private investors. The next two projects are in collaboration with the Department of, next slide please, sorry, with the Department of Public Enterprises and Transnet. Can you move to the next slide? Thank you. Department of Public Enterprises and Transnet. The first one is the Nuha Manganese Export Terminal. And this involves developing a world-class 16 million ton per annum manganese export facility at the port of Nuha to complement the port of Saldanha and cater for projected demand of 22 mega tons per annum. It includes a train unloading system, a stockyard for the storage of manganese prior to shipping, a conveyor system linking the stockyard, a ship loading system and supporting infrastructure. And there, the project costs are 10 billion and we've asked for 1.5 billion from the fiscus. And then we have another Transnet project, which is the Cape Town Container Terminal Phase 2B. And this project really is to refurbish the container stacking area within the terminal to increase the stacking height, to introduce a truck stacking area, as well as upgrade certain software to facilitate the movement of trucks between the port industrial park and the container docks. The project aims to upgrade the rail infrastructure and increase capacity by accommodating 50 wagon trains from the current 40 wagons. And here the project costs are 1.8 billion and we've asked for 351 million from the fiscus. The next project is the Lufering Mixed Use Housing Development Project. Today we've partnered with City of Johannesburg again and the Department of Human Settlements. The program prioritizes bulk infrastructure to unlock other public and private sector investments. It's got the capacity to accommodate over 30,000 households and includes 18 educational facilities, commercial development, retail offices, and the like, parks, recreational sites, and also some provision for urban agriculture. The project costs are 7.7 billion, and the ask from the fiscus is 3.9 billion. And then the last program is the student housing infrastructure program, where we've partnered with the Department of Higher Education and Training, as well as the Student Housing Infrastructure Program Management Office, which is housed within the DBSA. As we know, there's approximately a 300,000 beds need for student accommodation throughout the country. 26 public universities and 50 public TVET colleges have been identified, and the program will be rolled out in five phases. This specific phase concerns eight institutions where we are aiming to deliver 14,898 beds. As part of the submission, the project costs, they are 5.2 billion, and we've asked for 2.7 billion from the fiscus. So those are the eight programs that we have submitted for government contribution as part of the 100 billion that has been provisionally committed or allocated to us. And I think you will agree with me that there, in total, the ask is 25.2 billion out of the 59.4 billion of the project costs, so the majority of which we aim to crowd in from the private sector, which includes commercial banks, institutional investors, fellow DFIs, as well as multilateral development banks. Next slide, please. So this is just an infographic or a schematic to show you the sector distribution as well as geographic distribution of the projects that are in our pipeline. And these really talk to the eight projects that I've just taken you through. You will see there's sort of a water human settlements projects, transport projects, as well as water and sanitation. And I think you will note there that the reach of the infrastructure fund is nationally, as well as the projects are spaced out throughout the provinces. I think I will stop there, Honorable Chair, and thank you for the time. If I can, we do have one more slide. If I can hand over to my colleague who will be 2 minutes, Ellen Ridgard. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Zora, and with your permission, Honorable Chair. So good morning to Minister Dill and Minister Gwangwana and honourable members. And this slide is in fact our last slide of this presentation, and the message here really is just indicates that we have a considerable look ahead in terms of the pipeline of projects and programs that we are looking to introduce into the infrastructure fund. As Mafati indicated in considerable detail, the pipeline of projects and programs is run through the ITA process. That we also have one or two other feeds into the pipeline of the infrastructure fund. And the two columns that are highlighted in green here were in fact projects that were submitted to the BFI prior to the infrastructure fund's involvement and were referred back to the infrastructure fund through National Treasury via ITA. So there are two projects there. Will be put forward to the Infrastructure Investments Committee. The date here is the 20th of October, but unfortunately that has been delayed and it will come through in the next meeting, the next sitting of that committee. And the project, the first project is the SFP Evoca node. So that's one of the metros that we are supporting. It's a commercial property development with a number of mixed-use elements to it. It's a 350-hectare site, and funding there is required to put in the bulk infrastructure in order to unlock and enable the development there. At this stage, the estimate is about $11.5 billion from a project value. We estimate that the bulk infrastructure will be around $1.4 billion and 10.1 million will come from private sector investments. I will say that for both of these projects, We are in the initial phases of signing our memorandums of agreements and our non-disclosure agreements with the metros, and site visits are being conducted as well to just establish the proper boundaries of the projects and how we will take them to market. The second of those projects is the Nelson Mandela Bay entry nodal project. It's a similar project to the one in Essa Green, but it is part of the SIP 24 human settlements strategic project, and funding there is also a requirement for not to involve the infrastructure elements of the program to ensure that it goes ahead. And the numbers there are approximately 2.8 billion for the bulk, which will be a blended finance approach, and then 16.1 billion will be a private sector led investment for that development. In addition to those two projects, which are firm projects that we will be putting through to the committee, we have a number of other projects and programs, and the pipeline is actually fairly substantial, and we've only put our most advanced pipeline considerations on the slide. The South African National Space Association, SANSA, has got two projects. We have entered into a memorandum of agreements with SANSA. And one, the first element is the infrastructure hub phase two. We're still putting together the details around that, so you will see a lot of the confirms on that. And the second element at SANSA, which you'll see on the right-hand side, is in fact the SKA, the Square Kilometre Array data hosting facility that we're looking to assist with as well. Then we have two national programs. The one is the National Hospitals Program and the National Schools Program, which are being developed as a national initiative through ESA, and also with assistance from the Project Preparation Division of the Development Bank of South Africa. And you will know that the Project Preparation Division has been granted an element of funding to help prepare projects that are specifically not bankable yet for the market, but will be part of the infrastructure fund pipeline going forward. So the hospitals program and the schools program both form part of that initiative. Just to mention a couple of the other projects which you'll see in the extreme right-hand column there, there are a number of projects that come through ESA in terms of their catalytic program, and these are projects that essentially allow the infrastructure fund to provide some investments to catalyze further developments in the project area. There's also the Olifants River Water Resources Development Program, which is now being restructured as the Olifants Management Model. That's a well-advanced project and program also connected to the Ebenezer and Olifants Squirts discussion that Flora discussed earlier. And that will be an extension of the water program there. And that's a program of about 28 billion, which we're looking to bring into the pipeline probably within the next approval cycle as well. We have Saldanha Bay, the IDZ. Also, it's a precinct, the port precinct redevelopment and upgrade. And we'll be looking to bring that in. And the Steady Beng municipal sewer system as well, which we know has needed some intervention for quite some time. We're in discussions with both municipality and DWS on how we may assist that project as well. So just to indicate here that we have a really good look at it. Our pipeline is approximately, we're trying to look approximately 3 years ahead of where we are now, to make sure that we can coordinate carefully with ESA and with the department to bring the strategic projects and priority projects forward as much as we can into the infrastructure fund. And with that, I think that's the end of our presentation. Thank you, Honourable Chair. We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister Dilil and your team from Infrastructure South Africa and the team from National Treasury. I now invite in the absence of any addition from both teams, invite honorable members for questions and comments. Honorable Tring, honorable Graham Murray, in that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just firstly, I want to appreciate the presentation, and so thank you to the officials, the minister, and all involved for the presentation. Chair, just my questions. Have been answered in the presentation, possibly just move through those, but firstly, why infrastructure and the infrastructure fund, ISA and infrastructure fund, when we have, you know, capable officials in the IDT to do coordination and monitoring. So we understand that ISA is not an implementing agent, but more looking at the coordination and the monitoring. So is there not a duplication? And have there been an assimilation of some sorts to also tap into the expertise that exists in other entities like the IIDT? Secondly, what will the role be of these particular entities, like the IIDT? What will their role be as implementing agents? When considering also some of the work that has been as an implementation, there were some challenges.
Honorable Tring, I think we have lost you somewhere, maybe due to the line that is not clear. In fact, you may switch off the video so that your line is a little bit better.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Was my first question clear? Don't have to repeat that. Can I go on to the second question?
Okay.
Are you able to hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you clearly now.
All right, thank you. So my second question is, what will the role of the implementation agents like the IDT be? Considering that, you know, we've had the implementation agent to Development Bank of South Africa, the Telkom Towers, and we still had issues there. So again, other entities that are able to perform and to do the work, that, for example, the Development Bank of South Africa is doing, what is going to be their role, and how are we going to look at synchronizing and using the synergies that we possibly could use to fast-track projects. The Memorandum of Understanding, or the MOA agreement, was signed in 2020. Is there a total amount of the 100 billion over the next 10 years, which on average would be 10 billion per year, but is there any indication as to how much of that 100 billion has already been transferred to ISA, and what the status of that particular account actually looks like? Then my fourth question is, what is the status of the also blended funding? So we understand that we talk about private sector getting involved. Do we have a fixed amount of the involvement of the private sector with regards to private sector investment in the projects that have been identified? So is there a fixed amount in terms of the investment from the private sector? Then with regards to the evaluation and appraisal process, it certainly seems like a complex process when the organogram or the flow chart was put up. But my question here is, And I'm thinking about what the president spoke about, removing red tape. So what would the turnaround time be from an application? application to approval. So has turnaround times targets actually been set? You know, is it 1 week, 1 month, 6 months? So and I understand also that obviously it depends on the scale of the project, but can we get some estimations of what your turnaround times would be? And then lastly, Chair, I'm happy to see also the involvement, I think, just in school development, development of schools and the building of schools, taking into consideration that we currently still have 5,000 of our schools that have pit toilets. We have 510 schools that have that are mud schools. We have some 169 of our schools that are without electricity, and most of your schools that are in quintiles 1 to 3 still have, that's mainly your schools in your township areas, still have no laboratories. Is it these particular schools that have been identified, particular schools in our township areas, for development and upgrade? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tree, Honourable Grandmother. Honourable Grandmother.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Sorry about that. I do apologize. Thank you very much to everybody for the presentation, and thank you for all those involved. And I find the concept of ESA super exciting. The fact that we have a sort of central coordination for these large infrastructure projects. But I'm still battling to get my head around where everybody fits in and how everything works within the various structures, and who's responsible for the oversight of things. So, for example, we've got the infrastructure fund. I don't know where that resides. My understanding is that the head of the IF is appointed by the DBSA. So in other words, then do they report to the DBSA? Do they report to the investment, the Infrastructure Investment Committee? Do they report to ESA? So I don't understand who's doing oversight of whom and how that all works. DBSA has ring-fenced a fund specifically for this collaboration. Who then looks at the fund? Who provides oversight over it? How do we know that it's being properly managed? How do we know that you know that they're meeting all those specific requirements? So my biggest concern around ESA, and I think I've been saying this since it was developed, is I don't understand who's responsible for oversight, because there are little sections of ESA that reside in DBSA, in the President's Office, in DPW, National Treasury. So at some point we need to establish whose responsibility it is to do the oversight over ESA and what they are doing in terms of every single one of the acronyms that were named today. So that's my first thing, is where everybody fits in. Then I wanted to ask, with respect to DBSA, DBSA is a Department of Public Works implementing agent. Now, I'm assuming that they have to forego their implementation agency role on any of the projects that fall under the infrastructure fund. So I would just like to get confirmation on that. And I'm just curious as to whether or not I don't know how DBSA is generating funds out of the infrastructure fund, whether they're taking a management fee for the funding that they're managing, because at this stage they're putting in 50% of the costs of the IF. They have to forego their implementation role on IF-funded projects, I would assume. So how is DBSA then generating any income related to any of this massive infrastructure spending? I saw that there is assistance from the Infrastructure Fund and from the Infrastructure Fund and DBSA Treasury in terms of procurement, so in terms of procurement planning and or procurement support on projects. I wanted to know whether or not this is supported by legislation at this stage. In other words, if they are administrators of a fund or they are the sourcing of the funding, whether or not they're in a position then to be involved in procurement at any stage. Then also, with respect to the projects that we were shown, I mean, these are fantastic projects, and obviously they're massively needed. My concern is that at this stage they've only sourced, in most cases, half of what is required for these projects. Now, we were told that these SIPS projects were all shovel-ready. In other words, when Honourable Thring spoke about red tape, these projects, the idea behind Infrastructure South Africa was that the red tape would be minimized and that the projects are shovel-ready, ready to go, they just need the funding. But now we're sitting in a position where there's only half of the funding that has been sort of sourced. What happens if we don't get buy-in from private sector? And will we be approaching people like, yesterday there was a report that South African government is giving 85 million rand to the Chinese Infrastructure Development Bank, or, you know, a central infrastructure thing, which is surprising considering we actually need our own investment. But will we then be approaching international countries or other countries to say, look, you know, give us funding? So what happens if the markets are hesitant to support these projects? Where else will we look for funding to ensure that these projects are completed? Because we're literally looking for at least half, in most cases, of what is required to see these projects through. My ears perked up a little bit with Mr. Redgard when he said, in terms of the Etiquette and the Nelson Mandela Bay projects, that they're busy with non-disclosure agreements. I'm very concerned that we're dealing with funding, a lot of it is government funding, and that there are NDAs that are being signed. So I'd like to know why government entities are signing non-disclosure agreements with government funders. That for me is a little bit concerning. And then there's a lot of monitoring and evaluation of the projects that's going to be done by the various members of this organization, the structure. Will that dispense with the high costs we're paying for consultants, or will it be done over and above the role of consultants on projects that are done for government? I think those are my questions at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Grandmare. Honourable Fanstaden.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, Honourable Minister. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Now, I also have a concern about if the private sector will not come on board fully or at all to get funds for the refurbishment of our infrastructure, and as well as from international investors. That's a bit problematic for me. My question on that matter is, however, do we have a plan B in place if that plans don't come to realization? And then I'm sitting on my health portfolio as well, and have conducted many visits to many state hospitals across the country for the past 3 years. And I must tell you that the hospital infrastructure in our country is really in a terrible state in the public healthcare sector. My concern is, however, we've been told 2 weeks ago in the Eastern Cape by the MEC there, but just to rebuild one of those new state hospitals, just to get the shovel into the ground, they're going to need an amount of 1.9 billion rand. Now, the fact of the matter is that all our hospitals is currently, state hospitals, is current infrastructure is currently a big problem. Is there any predictions or plans from this department to get exact amount of what over refurbishing of all the current public hospitals will cost to get that project going and to revive these hospitals? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable President. Let me add my voice in appreciating such detailed presentation, Minister, and your teams, the way that they have tried to way that these components are working. But on that one, I think let me start with this one. I hope that the Minister of Finance is here. On the list of the projects that have been displayed here and presented, let me say outright, as a person coming from Eastern Cape, in the eastern side of the Eastern Cape, with a project that has stalled for so many years, the Imvubu Dam, I am really disappointed that in the project that we're talking about, there is no mention of that project. If the minister is not here, I hope that Nokwanda knows that and then tells Minister Kodongwan, I'm really, really disappointed that the Imvubu Dam project is not part of the project that you're talking about. And then, okay, nonetheless, on the issues that you have presented, it is clear that you, when you talk about the blended finance, you are using Regulation 16 of the PPP regulations, or Act if they even act. But I understand that there is also a residual of that. And then, in asking that, yes, I think there is a residual of those regulations. So, what I would like to understand then is that if then there is such a residual on the card, but when you are presenting here, I'm coming closer now to what Honorable Graham Murray has said. And you have also listed many different oversight structures, which, yeah, is good because it will enhance the oversight function. But how are all these related to the parliamentary's oversight? Because when you are mentioning those oversight bodies there that I've seen in this light, there is nothing that is talking about the parliamentary oversight. And remember, the parliamentary oversight is the one that is going to be played by us, the Portfolio Committee of Human Settlement, the Portfolio Committee of Water and Sanitation, the Portfolio Committee of Health, the Portfolio Committee of Roads and Transport. So how do these oversight bodies that you have mentioned relate to the role that we as the portfolio committees are supposed to play? That is my first question. The second question is that you also have mentioned, if I talk about the oversight structures that you have mentioned, I don't know, I think it was the second lady, sorry that I've not captured your name properly. You talked about Infrastructure Fund Strategic Advice Committee, Infrastructure Investment Review Committee. No, they are good. I agree. Investment committee. Remember all those committees that you're referring to, as I indicated earlier, there's nothing that talks to the parliamentary oversight that we have to play. The second part is that, especially when it comes to some of the projects, we have raised this as the portfolio committee, that I think the entity, which is IDT, which had previously a good story to tell, forget about the part that it veered out of the rail or whatever, but I understand that IDT now is reforming itself, and with the new appointment, if it has been done, I understand it was on the process of the CEO, we have seen from the report that you have got. So how then do this Infrastructure South Africa with National Treasury and all this ensure that one of the entities that previously played a significant role, especially when it comes to infrastructure, is also given that role again. In fact, we're saying that this portfolio committee, IDT, should also be recognized as one of the agencies that can be used to implement some of these projects, just like DBSA, looking at how it has done previously and how it has reimagined itself right now with all the reports that we have received as the portfolio committee. We feel that it can really do a lot. I think our most argument as this portfolio committee is that the oversight component must collaborate. So we need to work together to ensure transparency. Why am I saying that? You just told us now that there will be some NDA signed. Why non-disclosure agreement when you talk of a government entity, when you talk of a project that is going to be done for the people of South Africa? Yes, we understand we will have this private funding, but why non-disclosure agreements are signed? Remember that when you talk of non-disclosure agreements being signed, that raises red flags when you talk of collusion and corruption. Thank you. Those are my comments. Over to you, Minister, and your team.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, can I get permission to switch off my video? My network is playing up on this side.
Okay, Minister.
Thank you. Chairperson, let me start with the point that you've just raised. My understanding in terms of the Constitution is that Parliament has got oversight over everything and over the executive authority. And anything where the executive authority or a department is executing any functions, the committee has got a right to oversight. So the committee has got the right of oversight over the implementing agencies. You've got the right of oversight in terms of your powers as enshrined in the Constitution. So going forward, since we talk about the reconfiguration of government in 2019, where government has created the infrastructure department, and it was so gazetted in August of 2019 with the role and function of this infrastructure department. And we were tasked as DPWI to go and establish the infrastructure department. But in terms also of the infrastructure fund, the committee also, you also have oversight powers there. Because again, the infrastructure fund was established through a memorandum of agreement between National Treasury, that you have oversight over, DPWI, and also DPSA. So if there's anything that the committee would like us to come and report to the committee about, we very able and capable to do that, if so requested by the committee. Now, just to go back also to Chairperson, you also mentioned the IDT, and also Honorable Tring also mentioned the IDT. The IDT is one of three implementing agencies within government. You've got the DBSA. DBSA is a bank and an implementing agency. then you've got Kuga Development, and then you've got IGT. Now, in terms of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, we've got three what we call scheduled A entities that rely on government grants for the operation. And one of the Schedule 2 entities is IDT. Now, we are all familiar with the history of the IDT and the reasons, but since the start of the term of the new board in August of 21, we have seen an entity that is surely making its way towards being financially sustainable. We have reported to the portfolio committee that the board has put a turnaround strategy in place, such as cutting expenditure, focusing on essential operating requirements, and they've also recruited personnel in key strategic positions to drive that turnaround strategy and to ensure efficient delivery. Also, the development and the progress that IDT is making, we have reported to the committee that we are projecting that by the year 2024-25 financial year, IDT might become financially sustainable. So we all agree with Honourable Chair entering that is the role of the IDT. All other entities have been established in terms of an Act of Parliament. If I can come back also that we must take in consideration is the various pieces of legislation that guide us on the implementation as the executive how to do things. And one of those pieces of legislation is the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, through which the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council has been established. ISTA is also reporting there. We are reporting to the committee. But I want to assure members that no money from the infrastructure fund is transferred to ISTA. Like I've said in the past, that ISTA is playing a coordinating role and a sort of a single entry point on a database to record all infrastructure projects within the country. And like we have presented to the committee this morning, in terms of the infrastructure fund and the implementation thereof and what we have established in terms of that MOA, is available. Honourable Graham Murray also raised the issue of oversight. Again, Chairperson, the committee has got oversight over the infrastructure fund because DPWI is part of the stakeholders of the infrastructure fund, and therefore you have got oversight over the infrastructure fund. Now, DBSA as an implementing agency does not only serve DPWI. DBSA, they have got many other government clients that they are doing work for, and yes, they do charge a management fee for that. So, The issue raised also by Honourable Graham Murray about shovel-ready projects, Chairperson, we have reported that there are 48 active strategic infrastructure projects, SIPs. The project that are in procurement is to the value of 87.4 billion. Projects in construction is to the value of 193.6 billion. Then we have also gave a detailed breakdown of the number of projects per province, and also a number of projects per stage. There's only we have in the past made media statements about the progress of the work that is being done in the field of infrastructure, because ESA also plays a monitoring a role, and we bring all of that information together. So the project currently has created 421,000 jobs. There are another 328 projects in the ESA pipeline, and while this is a drop in the ocean compared to what the national development the plan target sees, what we must reach by 2030, there definitely has been a progress on that. So, and just about 3 weeks ago, we came to the portfolio committee to report on that. And we never said that all the projects are shovel ready. And we can definitely go and check it in that presentation that we have made. I think that the National Treasury can give a report on the Umsumbubu Dam. ESA has also been monitoring the implementation there, but since the National Treasury is online, I think they are better suited to give you an answer there. But in terms of the oversight, like we have reported today to the committee, that the budget facility for infrastructure has so far, the projects that we have submitted to the budget facility for infrastructure, since 2020, three of those projects have been approved and they have been structured in terms of blended funding, crowding in the private sector. We still have got before the budget facility for infrastructure another eight projects that we are seeking approval for. And in the breakdown presented by us this morning, we even give you the date as to when we have submitted those projects to the BFI. The BFI only meets twice a year. We have requested the minister that it should meet more often, and the minister is in agreement. But what we have presented to you this morning, Chairperson, definitely is 100% under the oversight role of yourself and the committee. If in terms of the details, I will ask Mthathi and Flora to also add in on, especially on the structure and how in the infrastructure fund with all the professionals that we have on board, how exactly the money flows, how the request flows, and how the infrastructure fund operates, Chairperson. I thank you very much, but there is a clear difference between ESA and the infrastructure fund. I thank you, Chairperson.
Leading on from Minister's proposition for us to aid in some of the answering, through you, if I may.
Okay, Mr. Kapu.
Thank you so much. So I think I'll just start, and maybe because I'll just pick up from where Minister had just left off, just around the turnaround time of the process of a project. So maybe just to indicate there are contributing factors that would, you know, indicate the turnaround time from one particular project which might differ from a different particular project. So the influencing factors are, one, the state of readiness or how far developed that particular project is. Secondly, the complexity of a particular project. And then thirdly, the BFI submission windows. Minister just highlighted that the BFI submission windows occur around the middle of the year, historically. So if we look for this 2022 cycle, the BFI submission windows was in May, and the second submission window was in June 2022. So in essence, for us to process projects through the National Treasury budget cycle, then that particular BFI cycle, we have to target those particular windows. So just in terms of, you know, the steps leading up to that, right? So we will get a project and that particular project will go through the technical committees. We have the Infrastructure Investment Review Committee sitting on a monthly basis. This is the technical committee chaired by our principal professor, Potence Ramaphosa. We look at the projects that have been submitted through, look at the projects through the lens of the eligibility and admission criteria, and that's on a monthly basis. On those, from those particular committees, projects that are funneled through the infrastructure funds then proceed and get structured accordingly, those that are channeled there. So as the year goes by, the infrastructure fund will structure, engage with the project sponsor, develop some of the projects a little bit further. Some will take maybe 2-3 months to develop it to the adequate level at which National Treasury will be require them to be by the time they reach the BFI, and others might take a little bit longer depending on the complexity or maybe the level of restructuring that is required. But in essence, regardless of when I get the project leading up to the submission window, we always target that BFI submission window in May or June. From that National Treasury budgeting process, what will then happen is the process will proceed according to National Treasury's committees that sit there, the joint technical committees, and etc. And I think the final decision is usually released around November, December, around there. So you just see that at any given point in time, even if I get a project in September of 2021, I can only submit it through the BFI submission window in May, June 2022. Or even if I get a project in February 2022, I can only submit that project through to the BFI process in May or June of 2022, with the decisions coming at the end of the year. But in essence, what we're saying is what the frequent sitting of the infrastructure investment review committee does on that monthly basis is that we are churning and looking at the pool of projects that can be considered and packaged, and by the time that the BFI submission window comes, we would have packaged maybe around 8 or so projects, as you would have seen the examples of the projects that were shown to you today, of the projects that are currently being considered. So just to say that the turnaround time can vary, however, we have tried to make sure that we introduce efficiencies and making sure that we are really reviewing the pipeline of projects that are available and those that require further development in time, so that we make sure that we have everything ready in time for the appropriate submission windows, and then we let the process take its course thereafter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Mahasi. Any other response?
Honorable Chair, this is Buitumelo from the National Treasury. Can I please respond to some of the points that have been raised, and my colleagues from the Infrastructure Fund will also do the same. Can I go ahead, Chair?
Yes, Buitumelo.
Maybe before I do, the Minister of Finance had to leave the call, because he's joining a cabinet committee meeting, and he sends his apology, and that's where he will be presenting. But we are here to answer any of the questions related to the National Treasury. Where I would like to start is around the time when the MOA was signed. So this MOA was signed in 2020, and I think in the same year, government made that commitment of 100 billion rand. Now, since the 100 billion rand commitment has been made, in 2021, the amount that was penciled in in was 5.6 billion. Over the 2022 MTEF, we are talking about, I think it's 17.5 billion. In this current financial year, 4.2 billion. Next financial year, 5.4 billion. In 2024-25, 7.9 billion. And what I need to explain with this amount is one of the things that we had to take into account was, even though the overall amount over the next 10 years is going to be around 100 billion, we knew that the take-up would start slowly and ramp up over time. And this is why, for example, using the analogy that I think it was Honorable Member Van Staden, I was talking about, it's about 10 billion rand per annum. So we are starting slow, and we know that with the take-up, it is going to increase over time. And I think, indeed, practice is showing that that's how it is panning out. Now, and these are amounts that have been announced as part of the budget process, the 17.5 as well as the 5.6 billion that I was talking about. Now, these amounts will continue to be allocated in future years over the next 10 years and I suppose even beyond that. And then two, I just wanted to deal a little bit with the issue of the Mzimvubu water project. And the Minister of Finance, during his speech this year, when he was delivering the budget, he did talk about the fact that the government is looking at the development of the Mzimvubu water project. At the time, he indicated that we were in advanced stages of development. And the update that I would just like to provide in this meeting is that large and complex infrastructure projects take time to develop, and I think Mahlatsi was also making a similar point. So even though in February we did announce that we were in advanced stages of development, it is still taking time, and I suppose at some point decisions around this will be made. It is important both from a project development perspective but also from a funding and financing perspective that we allow the process to unfold, and given how rigorous it is, we are making sure that the risks and the full life cycle cost and so on and so forth are anticipated before investment decisions are made. And I just thought I would provide that clarity. Now, in relation to the triple P, the IF in how it is structured. It is a platform. It's a blended finance platform that supports projects that may include PPPs and non-PPP projects. And I know that next week we are presenting in this very committee around the outcomes of the triple P review, and that's when we will provide the details. So the IF, the Infrastructure Fund, is not replacing the processes that are entailed within Treasury Regulation 16. In fact, the Infrastructure Fund is complementing the work of the triple P's, and next week maybe we will unpack some of these issues. So in many ways, what we are saying is that the IF is not coming in to replace the triple P process and the like. It is coming in to complement that particular process. And then maybe the other thing is around the infrastructure fund. There was a question by Honorable Graham Marie, who was asking questions about what if the private sector doesn't come on board. And I think this is a possibility, right? We can't say it's not, that risk is not there. And one of the things that I think we've got as mechanisms to ensure that we minimize this as far as possible, notwithstanding the fact that the ESA processes that have been explained are quite rigorous in terms of determining the bankability or the investment readiness of the project even before it comes into the DFI conceptually, this is how we are thinking of structuring it financially. What do you think of it? And they usually get input before this project is completed or is fully structured. And they take those inputs into account in the structuring that they make. But also the IFSEC committee that Mahlatsi spoke about, it is made up of people who come both from the public sector as well as the private sector. And I think on the private sector, some of the skills that are there relate to people who are coming from a finance and banking background. And those are some of the people that are able to advise before projects actually go to the market to say, from a structuring perspective, these are some of the challenges that you might face. But let's just say this, if ever this risk materialize, it doesn't mean that we can't go back to the drawing board. The decision to reconfigure, to redesign a project is always there. If it goes out and it turns out that nobody is willing to participate in that project, then we, you know, the government can always go back and then it is restructured or redesigned in how it is done. And maybe the last point that I just wanted to comment on is around oversight. And I think Minister Delil has dealt quite extensively with the oversight issue. The point that I just wanted to make was in relation to there's an oversight at an institutional level. And given where the IM sits, they do report to the National Treasury, they do report to ESA, and they also report operationally to the DBSA, and to the extent that you know, there are committees of parliament that are responsible for all these institutions that I've mentioned, it doesn't mean that the parliament will not have authority over the work that these committees are doing. And then related to that is that there is also oversight at a project level, and some of the structures that Mahlatsi went through earlier on are just making sure that whatever government makes as an investment decision, we know that it has been informed by a very rigorous process underpinning that. The reason is because with any cents that we spend, we want to make sure that there is value for money. And in relation to the BFI, because I think there's been some points around the BFI. The main point there is that the BFI is a subcommittee of the MTEC, and MTEC is a budgeting structure. So the reason why, or part of the reason why we've got the BFI sitting around the same time that the budget guidelines are issued is simply because the BFI process is linked to the budget process. And it is true what Minister Delil was saying, that there could be better synergies around the technical processes that you know, that underpin the BFI process. And that is something that we are looking at. And Chair, this is where I would like to leave it and hand over to my colleagues in the Infrastructure Fund to deal with some of the specific issues on the project. Thanks.
So we're going to respond now. Wait a minute.
Flora will respond.
Is she still in the meeting? Oh, okay. She's in, but she... Okay. Now she can respond now.
Flora? Yeah, you're on the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Apologies, my connectivity is not stable. If I may humbly request that I keep my video off, if that's in order.
Yes, you may do so.
Thank you. Thank you for all the questions, honourable members. If I can start with Apologies, I got cut off when Rutumelo was talking through the numbers, and maybe just to clarify or confirm that of the three projects that I spoke about, which in terms of which we were successful during the 2021 BFI process, those monies have been received by the infrastructure fund. I think that amount, those amounts are in the, if I tend to be corrected, but about 1.7 billion, which are in a ring-fenced account held within the DBSA structure, but separately for these projects. I also just want to go back to explain how we are incubated within the DBSA. So I think, as Mametsi has indicated, apologies, as Mashati has indicated, we are set up as a ring-fenced entity within the DBSA. This means basically that we have Chinese walls, apologies if that's not the correct term, but information barriers, for the lack of a better term, to ensure that we are ring-fenced from the operations, commercial banking operations of the DBSA. This is so to avoid a conflict of interest with the DBSA transacting and coverage teams, and also to facilitate when the time comes of the projects that we're taking to the market. We expect DBSA, alongside any other financial institutions such as your NDB or your APSA, your Nedbank, to participate in funding these projects, and that's why we are ring-fenced. So we are not part of the DBSA. I think some of you honourable members may be familiar with how the IPP office is structured, which is also one of the programs that is incubated successfully by the DBSA and not part of its operating segments. And then in terms of and Minister De Lille did cover this, but just to say, in terms of the MOA and oversight, unlike, for example, the IPP office, whose parent, for the lack of a better word, is the minister or the Ministry of Minerals and Department of MRE, Minerals and Resources, we don't have such a parent. The MOA is structured such that we are housed within the DBSA because our mandate follows that of the DBSA. However, our pipeline oversight is from ESA. So ESA will channel blended finance projects to us. Typically, as Minister De Lille has also mentioned, of the SIPs, the strategic integrated projects, those that lend themselves to blended financing will be channeled to us. So our pipeline oversight falls within the domain then of ESA or DPWI. And then in terms of the funding allocations and the funding, the public sector or government contribution, this 100 billion that has been spoken about, for us to tap into that, obviously, as Butimelo has indicated, Treasury then is the entity to whom we approach in terms of a BFI submission, and in there, it's a rigorous process in terms of the project. There's various elements, Butimelo would have touched on them, you know, shovel readiness was mentioned, socio-economic analysis, financial analysis, options analysis, aligning to the five-case methodology, which was also mentioned on this call. So it's quite a rigorous appraisal process. And by the time we take the projects, you know, to access this 100 billion from Treasury, then Treasury is able to scrutinize the financial structuring that we put in forward. So in terms of the BFI application, we will, for example, set out what government contribution we require, which then is required to blend with the private money, so to speak. So that ties in with our role to crowd in the private sector. Now, then you can see Treasury as a signatory to the MOA as providing that funding approval or oversight for the infrastructure fund. Everything else, we leverage off DBSA systems from a support function. So from utilizing their human capital or HR, utilizing systems that are in place, for example, the supply chain management protocols, etc. We leverage the DBSA ones. However, we've also, as part of our governance and compliance framework, initially have set up our own delegations of authority. We have governance processes as well as policies across the four pillars within the infrastructure fund. There is only 17 of us at the moment, but I think as time goes and pipeline grows, we will increase the team. So then to answer the question again, that typically of the third party funds that DBSA would manage and charge a management fee, DBSA does not get one from the infrastructure fund. So maybe just to reiterate that point. And then in terms of the structure itself of the members of the infrastructure fund, you will note that we are a mix of public and private sector employees. And I think it was deliberate that the private sector expertise be brought in terms of putting together financial solutions, which is really what we have been set up to do. We've been set up to become a center of excellence when it comes to blended financing solutions. So in us packaging those financing solutions, we leverage off the expertise of us that have been in the private sector, in banks, and understand what is bankable and what is commercially viable for the private funders, which I think one of the honorable members was asking about what if the private sector then doesn't buy into the projects that we offtake, so to speak, or put to the market. And then coupled with that, the point has been made that in terms of procurement support, so DBSA is a Schedule 3A entity, so we would follow PPFA, we would follow PFMA, and as Wikibella has pointed out, we have done a market sounding, and that's one of the processes or protocols we have in place. As you will note, honourable members, a lot of the infrastructure projects are leaned towards the social more than the economic infrastructure projects. And we know that lenders don't find social housing, student housing, a sexy asset class, excuse me for saying that. So our role then, in terms of the market sounding, which we've done on one of our student housing programs, is to package a structure and ask the market whether this is something that they'll be prepared to fund. We've done that on student housing, and then we've had good feedback from banks as to what, for example, the commercial margins, terms, et cetera, security that they would like to see if they would be prepared to fund these projects that we ultimately bring to the market. We also have done about, I think, 100 roadshows to date, if I'm not correct, where we have one-on-ones with your likes, you know, the banks, likes of APSA, Nedbank. So we have relationships with the private sector. We've spoken to institutional investors. We've spoken to fellow DFIs, your PIC, your MD, your multilateral development banks. We've spoken to DBSA also, MDB, and British International Investment and the like. Just to showcase what our mandate is and what the ask would be when we do bring projects to the market. So I think that was an important strategy in place so that we keep them appraised of who we are and what we are being set up to do, such that when the projects, on a no-name basis, they're able to guide us as to whether this is something that they'll be willing to fund. So those are just some of the strategies that we've used. And then I also want to point out that I think honorable members are also aware when REAP started round one, the market wasn't completely comfortable with the asset class and what Eskom and DMRE were doing. And I think you will remember in the initial stages, your PICs, your DBSAs were the primary funders on those deals, notwithstanding they had government guarantees. But as the round two, round three, et cetera, the market started getting comfortable with how the PPAs were bankable and that risks were appropriately placed with the person best able to handle them, the public sector versus the private sector. And over the years, you would have seen now REAP is a successful program. So these are some of the things that we will be doing as the infrastructure fund through soundboarding and also testing the market. And I think the risk, as indicated by Butumelo and Honorable Frans Darden, as well as Honorable Graham Murray, the risk is there that the private sector may not be willing to fund these projects. But we do have mitigants in play, if I can put it that way. And then we also have, in terms of the MOA, even though we are to subscribe to Section 217 of the Constitution Principles in our procurement of goods and services, in being fair, transparent, open, and the like. However, I think Butumela has also mentioned that we don't necessarily assist with PPPs, but also non-PPPs. So it's dependent on what the ask is from the project sponsor. So I think in the slides that I spoke to, there's an indication of the ask from a government as either a grant, which we'd be getting from BFI as a grant, or otherwise. Remember, the infrastructure fund is also to be seen to be self-sustaining in the long term, notwithstanding that the DBSA as well as Treasury are funding 50% of each of our operating costs. So we are able to not only become a grant dispensing institution, but also provide the BFI money on a concessional loan basis, so which would be much cheaper than what any private sector funder would provide to the sponsors. And then the other point I just want to make is that in terms of Honorable Trim's question about what is the ask from the private sector, again, this is on a deal-by-deal basis. My point previously is you will see we've asked for X amount from BFI, and then in the BFI submission, we've also said we will need to crowd in, say, 2 billion on a specific project. And of the 8 projects and programs that we've put forward, I think the numbers were that 27.2, if I'm not mistaken, billion was the ask from BFI. And you will see out of that, the project cost, the remainder of the project cost is 59 or so billion. So the majority of the ask is from the private sector, but the slides that I had shared initially do set out what the ask is from the private sector. And then I think the one thing I want to tackle is the issue about the non-disclosure agreement. So Honorable Member Graham Murray, as well as I think Honorable Van Staden and yourself, Honorable Ntobongwana, raise the red flag when it comes to non-disclosure agreements. Maybe just to understand that we as the Infrastructure Fund are here to provide and come up with financial solutions and in blended financial solutioning. And in this process, as alluded to, we need to bring in the private sector. At the inception stages where we design and package the instrument and the program and assist the project owners wherever we can at the inception stages, there are instances where, for example, a TCT or a Transnet would have sourced the expertise of outside counsel, maybe to help them to prepare a feasibility study or other study. And within that framework, that information is proprietary and is confidential. it's not out in the market. So from that perspective, if we need that information shared with us to enable us to package the BFI submission and enable us to put together a funding structure, which will then offtake to the private sector community, there has to be that arrangement where the confidential and proprietary information is protected. So to the extent that there is information that's already in the public domain, obviously that is not subject to an NDA, but there is a need from a legal perspective to then make sure that any information shared with us from the project sponsor that has confidential and proprietary information is then covered, and we also have obligations to uphold that information as confidential. So that's why we enter into these non-disclosure agreements. We have mandate letters, we have memorandum of agreement, and similar to any, and I think you understand the need for that to understand what our roles and responsibilities and obligations would be. But the NDA kicks off our engagement to just ensure that we subscribe to those obligations that are confidential and proprietary, whether to TCTA in this example or Transnet or otherwise the advisors that would have assisted. And then I think, Honorable Chair, I have covered what I wanted to cover, and happy to have follow-up questions elaborated if there are any. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you so much, Flora. Thank you so much, Minister and the team of National Treasury. Minister has to join the cabinet. I think we must release her honorable members. Thank you again, Minister, for being part of our meeting, especially that the DM is not in. So we really appreciate that. Honorable members, these are the responses and comments that we have received on this so difficult item that we have today. Some of the questions that have been responded to, as much as they giving green light, and we appreciate them. I think you must understand where we're coming from as members of this portfolio committee, and asking these questions is because we are seeing that there are some red lines, and in most cases, it feels as if as this portfolio committee, it does, because the funding is not coming from the department, then we won't be able to do oversight and to get the reports properly. We have raised this several times. We appreciate that there is ISA, and we also know that there was really a need of infrastructure South Africa. But we'll continue working with ISA and the department, and when necessary, we will raise questions and we will invite you where we feel that there is some demystifying that needs to be done. So we appreciate the National Treasury, DBSA, if it was part of the meeting. We really appreciate your presence and in this meeting. On a lighter note, the issue of Umzimvubu Dam, as I know, I raised it. I know that the minister talked on this, and I was concerned that it is not appearing on the project that you have mentioned. And knowing full well that the impact of that project will be massive, when you talk of OR Tambo and Alfredo region in the Eastern Cape. Thank you again for responding to us in this manner. We will now then, honorable members, go to the next item of our agenda, which talks to the minutes of the previous meeting. Those that are from National Treasury and ISA, then they may leave the meeting, and then we'll continue with our meeting. We had minutes that Ms. Martini said that we felt that they must be sorted out because we had not read those minutes. And then today we will deal with them in the minutes of yesterday's meeting. Can we then fly to those minutes?
Chair, I've already fly to the minutes. I'm not sure if they are visible on your side.
Yes, they are. They are. Ms. Martinez, can then you can go up because we have managed to read to them. Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Honorable members, these are the minutes of the meeting that we held in 2nd of November, in which we are dealing with the report of our oversight visit to the telecom towers. Are they the true reflection of what we discussed, and are there any corrections for error, spelling, grammar, and all those things? May I have then the mover that we adopt this minutes as a true reflection of that meeting that we held on the 2nd of November? Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable
I'll second Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Van Stalvey. Ms. Martinez, then we move to the second set of our minutes.
Thank you, Chair. The next set of minutes is yesterday's minutes, where the committee dealt with the briefing from the CWI on progress regarding efforts to get the ethics, compliance, infrastructure, and consequence management unit fully operationalized. That meeting was held yesterday. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Honourable members, are these the true reflection of the minutes of the meeting that we held yesterday? Honorable members,
I'm happy, Chair. I propose adoption.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Van Skalvik. And those minutes are since adopted. Thank you, Honorable Members, again for such an interactive and progressive deliberations and discussions on a matter that we feel that we constantly need information on, the IFA and the blended finance that we're moving to. It is part of us playing oversight role, Honorable Members, as the members of this portfolio committee. So your deliberations today, I think they have provided a lot of insight to many of the Honorable Members and to South Africans of how the 100 billion moving forward and other infrastructure funds will be utilized in moving forward. We must not be ashamed, Honorable Members, when we mention projects that have been mentioned several times in the State of the Nation, in the budget votes, and when we see the report, those projects are not mentioned. It is our duty as public representatives to raise those issues. Thank you again for such an interactive, progressive discussion. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you.